Welcome to episode 117 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on August 9th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate on our show tonight, please call 724-444-7444. Our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join live with our other participants to chat, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now button to participate on the right. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Daryl, welcome back. It's another week. We don't have Monty tonight, but how have you been since last week?
Oh, not bad. Went on a photo walk with some of the caching friends on Saturday. Kind of got rained out, though, so we ended up hitting a couple of museums that were right there. One of the, well, actually the place that we planned on doing the photo walk has a museum, so we kind of planned for the rain, but didn't plan on the museum being as small as it was, so we ended up hitting another museum later on. But I love doing these photo walks because each of us got completely different views. You know, it was Dre, Celtic Caching Trio John, and I that went out, and the stuff that we have on Flickr is very different from each other. Even when we have the same subject, what we ended up with is so much different, and it's just really cool to do that. I'm excited, though, because tomorrow is 12 of 12 again, and I actually woke up this morning, kind of reached for the iPhone, thinking, okay, it's 12 of 12 day, and today I'm going to do it all on the iPhone. Wait a minute. Nope, that's tomorrow. And actually, for the folks that are listening to this recorded, you probably already missed it. And, you know, the big geocaching 12 of 12 is actually coming up next month. So this is going to be kind of the last time to practice for that. But we actually put together a couple of promos for the geocaching 12 of 12. So, Andy, can you play that first one?
Mark your calendar for Saturday, September 12th, because that's the first geocaching 12 of 12.
The 12 of 12 is a fun photo project where people capture their day in 12 pictures and post them for the world to see.
Since September's 12 of 12 falls on a Saturday, at a perfect time for caching, we're calling on geocachers to participate with photos of caching wherever you might be and whatever you might be hunting.
There's a new site at geocaching12of12.com with some information about the geocaching 12 of 12 and a list of all geocacher 12 of 12 submissions without the need to sign in. As always, we'd like those links submitted to our podcacher forums as well.
There are already plenty of events scheduled for the 12th, and we'd love to see photos from those events, and there's still time to list an event for September 12th. If there aren't any events in your city, consider hosting your own meet and greet so we can meet your local cachers through your 12 of 12 photos.
If an event isn't your thing, use the 12 of 12 as an excuse to hit the trail for a mini epic caching adventure. Why not try that 5-5 cache you've been hoping to find and capture the trip in photos? Or maybe try a power run to break your highest number of caches found in a day.
You don't need to have a good camera to participate. Even a camera phone will work. All you'll need is a place to post the photos online. So browse over to geocaching12of12.com for more information, and we're looking forward to seeing your submissions. To help you out, Sonny, how about a tip?
First of all, don't be afraid to try things with digital cameras. There's no film cost, and you can try to check it in the field. If it doesn't work out, you can try it again and delete it if it's really bad. But, you know, try saving those photos that don't look that good to review on the computer when you get home later. You might find some gems for use as backgrounds or for things like murals and scrapbooks.
So I'm really looking forward to that and seeing all of the 12 of 12s from geocachers all over the world showing how they're geocaching. And hopefully we'll get a really good turnout for that. Andy, might we be able to get you into the fun?
I hope so. It's been a long time since I've done a 12 of 12. It really has. I started out doing, you know, pretty good, but then, you know, I didn't have my BlackBerry anymore. So for me, it was just hard to take a camera to try to get, you know, 12 pictures. It's something I would like to get back into, so I hope so.
Yeah, and it's so much easier when you just have that camera phone with you all the time, but the quality of the DSLR, and, you know, I'm really fighting that for tomorrow because I love using my D700, which is the big DSLR with the 50mm F1.4. I can take pictures that are just stunning in pretty much any condition with that rig. So I'm, like, fighting leaving that one at home tomorrow so that I force myself to use the iPhone for a change.
Yeah, I think with the iPhone, I mean, I know you're creative. You can come up with some pretty good pictures.
Well, and I've actually mixed it in on a couple of the previous, actually, I think it was only on one of the previous 12 of 12s. I just wanted to do, you know, a theme of food, I think it was. And it's a lot easier to take an iPhone into the restaurant than a D700.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, for me, I've really not been doing a whole lot since last week. I posted my week in review on my blog last week, and I'll go ahead and if I remember, link that in our show notes. But I really haven't done a whole lot. Twitter has really been blocked at work. It's about the main only thing. I did get a cache, I think it was a Saturday, with the boys, one that we hadn't found before. We DNF'd it before, but really, it's been a slow week for us. I'm kind of looking forward to this whole summer thing being over because it's been a really, really, really busy week for us. That's really been about it. Now, we're going to be up in your area this next weekend, but unfortunately, again, we won't have time to cache because we've got this. We're having a ride a day with Thomas, the train for our kids that's up there, and we're really not going to have time to do any caching either.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, we're going to be booked all day, too, so schedules just didn't mix well.
Not this time. Hopefully sometime soon, though. Now, Daryl, there have been a few things in the news with Groundspeak. Can you tell us?
Well, the big thing is that Groundspeak announced this afternoon that all of the Groundspeak websites, that's geocaching.com, the Where I Go, you know, anything that we think of pretty much as a geocaching affiliate, is going to be offline at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. So that's August 12th at 8 p.m., which is about midnight on the East Coast. And this is a software update to their core network switch, which will address some of their stability issues. Expect the maintenance to take about 2 hours.
Well, it's a good thing that I'm sleeping at midnight, you know, Eastern Time, so I probably won't notice it much if all goes well.
Yeah, and you'll probably want to get all of your pocket queries in tonight if you can.
Yeah, I do have some running, so we should be good there. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about virtual caches and some tools, mainly Evernote. But before we do that, we had a good question of the day from the Bad Cops. Let's hear that.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope my little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. I've asked the question, would you like to see virtual caches reinstated, or should they be left as waymarks? The overwhelming majority, almost 87%, said they wanted to see virtual caches reinstated, however, with more stringent criteria, much the same way Earth caches are handled now. What about you? Do you want to see virtual caches reinstated? Want to find out more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Well, that brings us to our topic tonight. We are talking about virtual caches. Now, Daryl, I think virtual caches, for one thing, I like them a lot to begin with because, you know, they're one thing that you get to learn a lot, and you don't, a lot more than you would with regular caches. Usually a virtual cache, for those of you who don't know, is a cache that doesn't necessarily have a box there. It's mostly you need to answer something about a history, some sort of question. A lot of times they take you to some really cool sites. However, due to Groundspeak rules, they are no longer allowed to be placed. So it's kind of a dwindling breed here. So, Daryl, you know, I like the virtuals. What about you?
Well, as I think pretty much everyone knows by now, I'm a big fan of virtuals. And yeah. One of the reasons is, by definition, they have to take you to someplace interesting. You know, a box can be placed in someplace boring, as we probably all know, like, you know, a lamp skirt. But a virtual cache has to take you to someplace interesting for some reason, whether it's history, whether it's geological, whatever. There's something interesting there. And that's what I really like about them. And I do miss the fact that we can't place new ones because we've found quite a few historical markers around the state that are not currently virtual caches, and they're really cool locations that we'd like to bring people to. But unfortunately, you can't place a physical cache there to bring them. It's not a geological formation, so you can't do a earth cache. And virtuals are really the only answer short of waymarks. And waymarks, you know, nice idea, but it just doesn't really work for us yet. You know, maybe with a little bit more work, they can be more useful, but they just still don't replace virtuals. And with waymarking, there's just so many. And you can have the same location in multiple categories, which just gets a little bit confusing.
Yeah, I think it was surprising actually to me what I found with the Bad Cop's question, because I found a lot of people who said, no, leave them on waymarking, which I thought was interesting because, you know, they, for me, waymarking basically became, I understand why they moved them over to waymarking, because they did that to kind of keep them from doing what they did on waymarking, you know, becoming every random thing becoming a virtual cache. And so I understand why they moved them, which kind of preserved the uniqueness of them as the ones that are grandfathered in. But, you know, to me, it's a confusing site. It's just not as cool. And it's the people don't get the numbers like they do on geocaching.com.
No, and you don't have the tools. And that's my real big problem with it. You don't have the good tools that we have for geocaching. And I think in part because it is so diverse for the categories, it's hard to build a tool that's going to handle it. You know, 100 and some odd categories, I think. I'd have to go and look. And quite honestly, I haven't looked in over a month now. But you have so many categories. How are you going to have that many icons on your GPS? And if you did, how could you tell the difference?
Well, and I think the main reason that the way, and this is not really a waymarking podcast tonight, but I think part of the reason that it did kind of fail, especially for those of us who are cachers and or who have, you know, done the virtual caches, is because it is more of a database of things. Like it can be a database of McDonald's, it can be a museum, it can be anything. Whereas that's not the case. That's what we don't want to see. For, you know, for as we're cached, we're used to saying one place, one waypoint for the one place, you know, within, you know, 512 feet, nothing closer. And whereas waymarking is more of a database of things that were, you know, anything. I mean, it's more of a database of things. You can go to a city, say, hey, I want to know where the closest museums are, or, you know, things like that. But it can just be a lot of random stuff. So with that, though, let's get back to tonight's topic. The virtual caches. What do we expect when we're going to decide to go to a virtual cache?
Well, number one, you have to read the descriptions for the requirements. And some of the common requirements are the photos. You have to take a photo at a specific location. Usually they'll ask for you to hold your GPSR up, which is one of the reasons why things like the Oregon 550 doesn't work so well as your camera, because if that's your camera, how are you going to take a picture of yourself with the GPS that has a built-in camera?
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, it was one of my big complaints with the Triton 2000 when it came out, because that was the first one to have a built-in camera. But it also holds true for those of us caching with like the iPhone. You have to have like a point-and-shoot camera. And it really does make sense when you're doing the virtual caches to have just like that nice little point-and-shoot camera with something like the Joby Pod, which allows you, Joby Gorilla Pod actually, which allows you to take that, set that up like on the hood of the car. You can wrap it around a tree branch, and that way you have something to hold it, put it in self-timer mode, and get the picture. But sometimes you have to have a specific object in the frame, and you want to make sure that you're not going to post any spoiler pictures, because a lot of the time you have to get information off the signs. So when that's the case, make sure if you take a picture of the sign, you don't post it. That's one of the common mistakes from noobs that we've seen, is they go and post the signs with all the answers on it. Sometimes you also have to be careful, because they will take you to multiple locations. Yeah, Andy, when we did the virtual run down in Toledo, we hit that one with, what, five locations?
Yeah, it was five locations, yeah.
And that was a really fun one, but, you know, it's five locations over the course of something like 8 miles, I think it was.
Yeah, you couldn't hike to it, definitely.
No, nothing to be sneezed at, and it was a lot of fun. In many cases, you have to do some math, you know, take these numbers off the sign, do the math, figure out what year it was, figure out how old the person was, that kind of stuff. And even so far as we have one that we're working on right now that uses some pretty heavy trigonometry, I think it is, to figure out where the cache is. It's actually a pretty easy routine if you're into trigonometry, but for those of us who haven't had any trig in, you know, decades, it gets a little bit tough. But almost always you'll have to email the cache owner with the information that's required, and that can either be done through an email address if they post one on the page or through the form on the website. So it is going to take a little bit of email work when you get home or, you know, whatever. You just have to write up your answers and send those in. Usually the pictures have to be posted to the website, so you don't have to worry about trying to figure that out. But, you know, one of the nice things that we kind of mentioned earlier but didn't really go into with virtuals is because those are now grandfathered in and you can't do any new ones, there's a finite number of these out there. So it's entirely possible to clear out all of the virtuals for your state, and there aren't going to be any more. So it's a nice little goal to hit, you know, try to get, you know, every virtual in your state or every virtual within 100 miles, you know. We're kind of working on that ourselves right now. But Andy, what should people really plan on taking with them when they go out on a virtual cache hunt?
Well, the most obvious thing is going to be your GPSR, and that's because you're going to need to know how to get to the site. Obviously, you could probably take a, you know, a Google Maps version of it and get there, because a lot of them are close to, you know, areas that you can get to. But I would say, you know, obviously your GPSR you're going to want to take. And since most of them require you to take a picture of some sort, you're going to want to take a camera too, whether that be the camera on your iPhone or your regular phone or your BlackBerry, something like that. You're going to need to take a picture. So bring some sort of a camera most of the time. Not always, but most of the time. And those times that you don't need your camera, a lot of times you're going to want something to take a note taking, you know, something to take notes on, whether that be a good old-fashioned notepad, a steno notepad like we had to have in, you know, junior high, or a PDA slash phone slash laptop, something that you can use to take notes. Because a lot of times you are going to need to do, like Daryl said, take some sort of a math problem or some sort of information on the side. Just like, for instance, a lot of the ones that we hit when we were in Toledo, they required us to take the sign, like the number off of the sign. It was a historic sign, and they wanted the number on the sign, or someone's birthday or death day or something like that off of the sign. So we needed to know exactly what we were, you know, we needed to email to the owner.
Well, another good thing about having the camera with you, whether the cache owner requires a photo to log or not, it's a great way to take a quick picture of that sign. And that way, even though you want to take the notes for whatever it is that you need specifically off the sign, you know, we all kind of make mistakes sometimes, especially when you're in the field trying to read off a tiny little PDA screen or something. And it might just be that you need another bit of information that you missed. So if you have the photo of the sign, you can go back and check for that too.
Yeah, I would say, and one of the things that I think that helped us when we were in the field is the fact that you were emailing that information to the cache owner right away. So as soon as we figured out what the information was, you pulled up the cache page on your phone and you emailed the owner with the information.
Yeah, and it's really nice to have that mobile connectivity just for that reason. If you don't, you know, you have, what did we do, 13 caches? Which is quite a number of virtuals. But yeah, it was 13 virtual caches in a day. And that's 13 emails that we'd have to go and type up from notes and whatnot. So it's really nice to be able to just, from the field, go and post the email right to the cache owner. But that is going to require some type of mobile device and mobile connection, whether it be you know, something like the iPhone, your Windows Mobile. If you have a netbook with one of the 3G or Evdo cards, you can use that stuff too, and that works really well. But just having some kind of connection above and beyond the standard, you know, internet phone connection where you can actually pull up a real web page is very, very helpful.
Now, a lot of us don't have that luxury. I know for myself, My phone is just a regular track phone, so I have got no way. I mean, I can do SMSing, but I have no way to really take notes on the phone. I do carry my laptop with me when we're caching, so that is an option. But for the rest of us, is there's got to be a good idea, you know, besides the regular paper. You know, what else can we use?
Well, I've been using a product called Evernote, which is free for a basic version, or it's $40, I think, a year for the pro version of it. And it's actually something that I started using for work and for doing some web clippings, because things like Google Notebook went away, and that was one of the ways that I managed my web clippings that I just had for things like prep on the shows. So Evernote kind of took that place, and I discovered how really great it is for doing the virtual caches. Because among other things, like text, it allows you to take photos, drop it into those notes, and audio, and drop those into notes. So you can do a voice note if you're in the field on a cache. If you have something like the iPhone or a Palm, even a regular phone, you can take a photo of it, email that photo if it's not one of the native apps, and that photo can go right into your notebook along with any notes that you put along with it. So it really does make dealing with these virtual caches easier, and you can post that information for reference for yourself later. You can always go back, and it really has made caching, virtual caching, I should say, much easier, because I can write my email right in there, just copy and paste, or even with the iPhone and the iPod Touch app, just hit email.
Yeah, and you can even, if you have, this is one of the things that I found too, that actually I can even use my Evernote on my regular old dumb track phone. And the way that I figured out how to do that is Evernote, you can link your Twitter account with Evernote, and then you can send the Evernote Twitter a direct message, and it puts it into your Evernote. So even with my phone, I can go ahead and create a note with that. Now, one of the things, I do have it on my iPod Touch, and that's the good thing. Even though I don't have a connection like you do with the iPhone, I can still take notes, I can still edit, I can do anything I need to, but and then save those for later. Now, one of the things that I thought was cool too, when we were going to do our cache run there, was the fact you were taking most of the notes for us. I was taking some notes, but for the most part, you were taking the official notes for the things that we needed to have. And with Evernote, you can actually make a notebook public. And so you had a caching notebook that you created, and it was public, and I can see all the notes in there. The bad cop could see all the notes. Dree could see all the notes that you had in there. And then we could go in and use those, for our logs if we needed to or whatever.
Yeah, one of the things that we should mention that we kind of skimmed over is that Evernote is kind of a cloud or hosted solution, but it does also work on the desktop if you have the app. But the great thing about Evernote, for specifically this kind of stuff, is that it is synced to the cloud, but when you're on the iPod Touch or even on the iPhone, I actually work offline in the iPhone. There's a little toggle switch that you can say, don't use the 3G network or don't use the cellular network. And I find that tends to work a lot better. So any of you using the Evernote app on the iPod or iPhone, you might want to try turning that off, because if it gets interrupted when it's syncing, I had some issues with it. So turning it off and then turning it on only when I wanted to sync really made it easier. But, you punch in all that stuff, you sync up, and then all of a sudden, anyone who it's shared with can go and see that. And if you have the pro account, you can actually do the sharing and have multiple people editing that same notebook, which just is so, so handy.
Yeah, and a side note, we have just for this podcast, we've got a shared notebook that we use to create and throw ideas in for ideas for the show.
Yeah, and it does make it really easy to plan that. And actually, SDA Jumpmaster also mentioned that on the iPhone, the app actually allows you to geotag your notes too. So that's something I haven't played with very much, but imagine if you're doing a virtual cache or trying to place a series of caches, how handy that could be when you want to go and take more detailed notes and tag it to a specific location. and then it just can, you know, search near here and find all that. But Andy, there's a whole bunch of platforms that Evernote works on. You want to go over that list real quick?
Sure, I would love to. The one that I use the most is the iPhone/iPod Touch, because that's what I have. But there are also, for other mobile devices, the Palm Pre, there's a client for. The BlackBerry, there's a client for. And any Windows mobile phone, there's also a client for. Now, if you're on the Mac or the PC, you can also get a Mac or PC version, which will allow you to do your notes right on the desktop. Now, if you've got a, let's say, Linux, or if you've got a phone that doesn't have a native client for it, but you can reach the web, Evernote at evernote.com has a web client that you can use too. And the cool thing that I found about it is I've just discovered this recently, is their search algorithm. You can search through your notes, and there's so many different things that you can do for searching. You can say, you know, if you're on the iPhone itself where it's getting the location, you can say, any notes that I've taken 6 miles from here. And it'll pull all the notes up from that you've taken from 6 miles. You can also do things like, you know, anything that was created today or within the last 6 days, the last 30 days. You can do all sorts of things, or you can search for notes that have pictures in them. The cool thing, and this is one of the things that I've really, really liked, is that Evernote actually has the ability to, if you upload pictures, if you upload, if you're a premium member, if you upload the PDFs, but mostly for pictures, it actually indexes the pictures if there's words on them. So say I had a shirt that said geocaching.com is cool, and I wanted to find that picture. I could just type geocaching.com, and it would find the fact that I had that written on my shirt and pull up that note. It's really, really cool.
Well, what we actually end up doing with the virtual caches is we will go and take the photo of the sign. And then under the photo of the sign, we go and put the text that we need, maybe some additional notes if we decide we need those, and email the cache owner the information. Then when I come back home and get that confirmation email, I just put in a bar and add in the confirmation email so that I know that that was confirmed. And I've actually had a cache owner come back to me, well, no, you kind of messed that up, and here's the right answers, but you were there, so go ahead and take credit for it. So at least then I had the right answers. So I don't know about any of our other listeners, but I do get calls on caches, you know, the phone a friend kind of thing, for just about everything. But on the virtuals, it's, you know, I'm here and I'm kind of confused, you know, what information do I need? And I can look that up because I have Evernote on the phone. I can just pop that up no matter where I am and say, let's see, that one, yeah, okay, that one, you have to have this information and this information. So it does make it nice. And on the web thing too, if you're at some place where you can't install the app, let's say like at the office where they don't let you install additional programs, you can just browse to the web page and look that information up there.
Well, and if you've got a USB key, they also have you can dumb down the version so it doesn't install, and you can place it right on your USB key too, at least for the Windows version.
Yeah, the Mac version, I'm pretty sure, would run without any incident because most Mac apps don't necessarily require that they be installed. There's a few that do, but for the most part, Mac apps will run. No matter where you want to put them, you know, they will run there.
Yeah, and we should mention this too. The free version, especially if you're just doing text, is way more than enough. You've got a monthly allowance of 40 megs, and that's every 30 days you get 40 more megs of space. And, you know, I'm looking right now at my account, and for me, I'm only using 9% of my account right now, and it says that I have approximately 18,000 typed notes that I can put in there now before the end of my thing. And from a camera phone, I could add 370 pictures. That's quite a bit of stuff, you know, just for every 30 days. Now, if you upgrade for the $5 a month, you get 500 megs of monthly upload allowance, and you also get premium support and some other search options. So it really is worth it, but you really don't even need to spend that really either.
Yeah, for most cachers, the free account is going to be great. You know, if you have one of the multiple account or multiple notebooks where you're doing a notebook for work, a work notebook for the church or whatever, and a geocaching notebook, chances are that you're a good candidate for upgrading, especially if you have a collaborative environment.
Yeah, that is true. But especially just for geocaching, the free one is probably enough. However, I think that you're going to find that you like it a lot. You like it a lot and you're going to want to upgrade.
Yeah, now we should also mention that the free version doesn't give you the collaboration. It just gives you the ability to publish publicly. So anyone could get in and get access to that information, which could be a little bit dangerous for cache information. You know, because if you go to the webpage, you could look up the notebook if you knew the address for it. And, kind of cheat if it's something that you didn't actually have to go and get a photo there. Someone could go get your answers and, claim the find themselves.
Yeah, you could do that. Again, and one of the cool things that I've found, too, and I've got a notebook that I call Notes to Tweet. And the way that I have that set up is it actually has an RSS feed for the notebook. And I use something like Twitter feed or whatever to monitor that RSS feed and tweet things out. So if I want to take notes and tweet them out to my Twitter audience, I can do that too.
Yeah, all kinds of cool stuff that you can do with Evernote. And they're still working on it, still constantly providing new features. And it's really a nice tool for geocaching, for the virtual caches, and Earth caches work very well for it as well. But even if you're going to be placing caches, it's a great way to take some notes about that location that you're scouting for the new cache.
That is true. That is true. If anyone has a question, give us a call at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Or if you're listening to this as a podcast and you want to give us some information, call our voicemail line, which is 206-3503-GPS, anytime, day or night. If there's any questions, go ahead and give us a call. Yeah, Daryl, before we close up here, we should mention we are in no way affiliated with Evernote. We're not getting any sponsorship from them at all. But it is just a really cool product that we do like. I'm finding that I'm using it more and more, especially with the iPod Touch, and then just when I get to a Wi-Fi, I sync that, and I'm never gonna lose that information if I don't delete it.
Yeah, one of the big things about Evernote, and we're just definitely very satisfied users, especially now that they've added the collaboration. I'm much happier with the product. But the big thing to me with Evernote that you don't get out of having like a notebook or keeping notes on your computer alone is that it does have that syncing to the cloud, and it's real time. It happens as soon as you get a connection from your mobile device. And if you don't have a connection, like when we were down in Toledo, we lost data service on my iPhone about four or five times, I think, and not a big deal because it just kept going until it got the connection and then synced up with the system then. But having that real-time sync just really makes it very, very nice, because I can add a note by email. You can email notes into Evernote and it will show up at home, it will show up on the web, and it shows up on my phone real time. I don't have to think about whether I'm in sync or not. If I have a note at home or at the office, all my notes are available anytime, any place.
That is true. Well, it looks like we don't have any other questions tonight. So Daryl, I would definitely say my recommendation, check out Evernote. That's evernote.com. Very useful for especially geocaching, like virtuals and earths and things like that. Any other final thoughts?
Not really. There's all kinds of stuff that you can use for virtual caching. If Evernote doesn't work for you, certainly don't go out and spend the money for the premium account until you've played with it with the free account, and then you can upgrade. But if it doesn't work for you, maybe even just the built-in notes app on your phone or PDA, or just keeping text on the computer, or save those emails if that really works well for you. But there's so many great tools out there, and we just find Evernote works very, very well for the virtuals and Earth caches.
Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and all of our links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info, or you can call our voicemail line, which can be found at 206-3503-GPS anytime, and leave us a message. Have a safe week and keep on caching, and remember all of your notes.